to have Paul Ryan on.
Well, we're going to hear some of his interview from Mark Levin's show last night. We're not quite the heavy hitters to be able to book a Paul Ryan on the show.
Well, I talked to him yesterday just after he came back from that speech.
He seemed a little ticked off.
Well, he should be. If you read the speech, I mean, it's the president spent his time going after somebody who's got the courage to come up with a plan to try to save the country financially, and the president really came up with nothing himself except to raise taxes. So I don't consider that to be very creative.
Congressman Ryan's plan clearly laid out exactly how this would be done, exactly how the path to prosperity would work, and where the cuts would come, where the adjustments would come. The president yesterday spent a good period of his speech blasting that plan and offering some wide generalizations on what he might like to do. I didn't see a lot of leadership yesterday.
Well, the president's own budget that came out about 2 months ago, according to scoring by the Congressional Budget Office, which takes in consideration what something will cost, I think his would add an additional, an additional $10 trillion over 10 years to the deficit. I mean, that's in addition to the $14 trillion where we are now. I mean, that's staggering. But that was the president's budget plan 2 months ago. Now that the winds of change happen, he says, well, you know, November election occurred, and you got this young guy by the name of Paul Ryan, who happens to be an economist, coming out with this audacious plan that's going to reconfigure the way programs such as Medicare and Medicaid are delivered to save the programs, and at the same time save Social Security, and at the same time make sure that every cent that we pay in taxes, if we continue on the same course in 30 years from now, there will be just enough money to pay Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, not even 1 cent on the interest on the national debt, or anything else. Or another way to look at it, by the year 2025, every dollar collected by the federal government, this is motor vehicle fuel tax, FICA tax, income tax, death tax, corporate tax, excise taxes, tariffs, every dollar collected by the federal government by 2025 will go to pay for Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and the interest on the debt. I mean, so this is a crisis. And when I read the president's speech, I said, I don't think he gets it. He just wants to continue with the same old programs and to beat up people who want to keep the tax rate the same. And that's what Paul Ryan says, just keep the tax rate the same.
Congressman, you're no stranger to campaigning. You're no stranger to watching others do it as well. As I watched the speech yesterday, I could not get out of my head that I was watching a campaign rally speech rather than, let's get down to brass tacks and see what we can do about fixing this.
Well, it unfortunately, that's the way it was, plus class warfare. And I talked to a lot of seniors, a lot of people, and they're very concerned that if the government continues spending the way it has, is that even the programs that they're the beneficiaries of now, Medicare and Social Security, will come under such heavy attack that a person who's recently retired may not have enough money around 15, 20 years from now. So what Ryan's plan says, look, if you're over 55, nothing's going to change in Social Security. It's just not going to happen. What has to be done, and he's looking at a combination of different things, is having more income exposed to Social Security tax, is extending the age that you'll be able to retire on Social Security tax, and on Social Security, and actually in some ways means tested it. Let me give you an example. Under Social Security, if the parent is drawing Social Security, at age 66, and has a child under 18, that child, in addition to whatever the parent gets, gets an additional $1,000 a month. regardless of the income of the parent. I mean, I knew of a member of Congress who was a multimillionaire, and he was drawing Social Security himself, and each of his twins was drawing $1,000 a month. I mean, that's the type of stuff that you got to say, you know, that's not the purpose of Social Security. It was never intended for that. And so you have to start reforms, taking a look at, are the beneficiaries of Social Security now what was originally intended, and is there a way that you can make that smarter so that beneficiaries that really don't need the money don't get it?
Congressman Don Manzullo with us here on Straight Talk on WROK. Just a couple of months after an agreement on maintaining the current tax rates, the president yesterday called for tax hikes on those making $200,000 or more. He said he will refuse to renew them. Do you think that after giving business a little bit of comfort a few months ago and saying we're going to extend those rates for a small period of time, that they're right back on the defensive now after yesterday's speech?
It bothers him that people who work for money, who work for a living, and who are successful, he thinks should pay more taxes. And you know, if he feels that way himself, there's actually called a guilt fund that he could pay into,
and so
he earns $400,000 a year, and I would expect him that he would start paying additional income taxes because he earns more than $250,000 a year. You know, so let the people that try to feel guilty about it, let them go there and do that. The problem is this, you know. In fact, in a speech he says, and I believe that most wealthy Americans would agree with me. They want to give back to the country that's done so much for them. Washington just hasn't asked them to. What planet is that speech going to?
and the president's own debt commission made a recommendation of closing up some loopholes and getting that tax rate in line at about 23%, give or take, on the higher income. Well, Paul Ryan's plan actually calls for 25%.
It does. The uniqueness of the debt commission and what Paul Ryan is suggesting is you need an honest debate on where this country is going to go, so you put everything on the table. But the first thing that you do is you lock in place mechanisms that are going to protect Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. You do that when you do your own household budget. The first thing that you do, this presumes that you're not self-employed, the first thing that you do is you're going to take the first monies and make sure that's going to be used to pay the mortgage on your household and your taxes, which are usually included in one payment. You know, so you prioritize what's necessary. But I read the speech. I didn't have a chance to hear the speech yesterday because I was just didn't have an opportunity to. But I read the speech last night. I couldn't believe this thing. I mean, the devil is in the details. But when the president says that Paul Ryan's budget wants to cut taxes by $1 trillion, all Paul Ryan does is actually try to continue the tax rate where it is now.
And then late in the speech, Congressman, the president wants to raise taxes now, and then he also put forth a plan that in 2014, if Washington still doesn't have this debt problem under control,
yep,
he wants automatic new tax hikes.
Automatic new tax hikes with the trigger. So that gives the big spenders the opportunity to keep on spending, and then when you reach the point, it raises taxes again. I mean, that is really dangerous. You know, the reason we have Congress is elected every 2 years is so that people can come in, be accountable to the electorate, and not be in a position where taxes are, quote, raised automatically, end of quote, because of something that happened 5, 10, 15 years earlier.
Congressman Don Manzullo with us here on Straight Talk on WROK. I want to pivot a bit here. I know you've crunched for time a bit this morning, and get to the compromise between the White House and Republican House leaders on that budget deal from last Friday. Vote comes up later on today.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard $38 billion, and now a CBO yesterday said in terms of outlays or direct spending, it's just $352 million. Are you satisfied with that deal?
No,
if Republicans get enough, and are you going to vote for it?
That's not... The difference between the actual spending cuts would take place after the end of the fiscal year. So you have a difference between between fiscal year budgeting and outlays, and the fact that the fiscal year actually began October 1st, and now we're here in the middle of April. So, but CBO did say that based upon they actually said based upon a 10-year analysis, it comes out to $301 billion of actual savings.
So there is some lowering of the baseline here after the cuts take effect.
And a lot of this is, you know, it's technical budget talk. You understand it, and I try to understand it. But the bottom line is this. This is the first time I've been here, including under a Republican president and a Republican Congress. Because as far as I'm concerned, both parties spend too much. But this first time that I've actually seen people trying to move to the point where they're talking about spending less. That's new conversation in Washington. And, you know, it again, the reason we're in this position is the complete failure on the part of the leadership in both the House and the Senate last year prior to the November elections to even introduce a budget. And that's the first time that's happened since 1974. And so, you know, Nancy Pelosi was the Speaker of the House then, and Harry Reid was still the Speaker, or still the Majority Leader in the Senate. And so, when you don't have a budget, you can't run a household, you can't run a business, and obviously you can't run a government. And so, it's been nothing but band-aids, because first you introduce your budget, and then typically under Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution, a Congress appropriates or actually provides the money to fill in into the confines of the budget. So the budget presents the bookends so you know how much you're going to spend. That didn't happen. And so the decision to close down the government was actually made last year, way before the November elections. And it's been nothing but Band-Aid approach since then. The Band-Aids are called continuing resolutions, which means you try to continue the budget resolution that was passed the year before, giving you the same authority to keep on spending money. That's crazy. That's crazy. So I'm going to be introducing a bill to do away with continuing resolutions. Congress gets its job done. You finish it. Some state legislatures will take a piece of paper, put it over the clock. State of Illinois actually stops the clock. And I don't care which gimmick you use, bring in the cots, no one goes home, get your work done. And no, in Washington, they just sit around and they play games because they say, well, if there's not enough money, we just go in the back room and print it. I mean, that's disgusting.
The next fight here is going to be on the debt limit vote, mm-hmm. where I think some would look for the Republicans to get a substantial amount of concessions in order to vote for a rise in the debt ceiling. What do you hope to get out of those negotiations?
Well, it's got to be structured. There's so many things that are going on at one time. It's finishing up the budget from last year because the Democrats didn't have a budget. That's one thing. It's taking a look at this year's budget, which was just introduced by Congressman Paul Ryan. It's looking at when the debt limit has to be increased, which is could be the end of May, sometime the 1st of June. We're not quite sure. But if I vote for that, it's got to be attached with structural changes on the manner in which the government is funded. Not just eliminating this program or that program. That's not where you do the elimination. But structural changes on percentages of debt that you can have with regard to gross domestic product or something in there that severely reins in this incredible spending. There are 10,000 federal programs, 10,000 of them.
And every one of them valuable and unable to be cut.
Well, that's why I preferred you take a percentage of cut across the board for all discretionary spending, and that includes defense. And I got in a big fight with my Republican colleagues to say, well, you can't cut from defense. You know, we had a meeting, and Congressman Sam Johnson from Texas, who was a POW for 7 years, one of the great one of the great heroes of America, stood up, 80 years old. He said, don't tell me that you can't cut money from the Pentagon. He said, you could probably lay off three-fourths of those people. No one even know that they were, they'd been there in the first place. That's what he says. I mean, this man was a colonel. So, you know, you take a look at, can you cut the defense budget? Yes. And so what does that mean? And, you know, it's one of the things that I have seen happening in manufacturing facilities and other businesses. When the sales are down, oftentimes, you know, when sales are down, less money comes in, and the company becomes more productive because they have to take less money and stretch it as far as it was before. And I'm seeing some very unique things. And again, this has to be done on a local basis. I'm not advocating for it, but I saw where some library districts or some city councils in California have taken to privatizing the library system because there's a private firm out there that that can centralize the bookkeeping and accounting procedures as opposed to some cities almost having to close down the library system. And I'm not saying that's good or bad. What I'm saying is that when money is down, people become extraordinarily inventive in how to make the dollar stretch and do things even more.
Yeah, especially people who are used to doing it over their own kitchen table. Congressman, as always, we appreciate your time, your accessibility. We know you got a very, very busy day. We look forward to talking to you again.
Same here. Talk to you later.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
There's